Good morning. You're now tuned to the CWA Civil Rights Talk Show, An Hour of Power. Now, here's your host, the incomparable Errol Lyman.
Good morning, human rights activists all over the world. Welcome to Communication Workers of America, CWA Human Rights Hour Power, a justice field hour of talk, solidarity, and worker power right here on KYOK 1140 AM and the all new 106.5 FM. If you are visiting the beautiful city of Houston, you can take us home with you on kyokradio.org. You can listen and subscribe to us every Thursday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time. On kyokradio.org, CWA Strong app, or your favorite podcast player, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, YouTube Music, iHeartRadio, Podchaser, or search for CWA Hour of Power on your favorite podcast player. I won't take the time out again to address the residents of Los Angeles County. We are deeply saddened to hear about the devastating fires affecting your community. Our hearts go out to all of those who have lost their homes, possessions, and tragically, loved ones. We extend our deepest condolences to those who are grieving during this incredibly difficult time. We also want you to express our profound gratitude to the brave firefighters and first responders who are risking their lives to save others. Your courage and selflessness are truly heroic. Please know that you are in our thoughts and prayers. We stand with you in solidarity, hoping for safety, strength, and eventually recovery for everyone affected. This is from our CWA Our Power Radio Show family. Thank you for joining us this morning on the CWA Human Rights Our Power Radio Show. It's about us. That's right. It's about us. Working agreement, solidarity, living wages, worker power, and simply human rights. All those that are driving and listening, honk your horns if you support workers. We have a phenomenal show lineup with you this morning with Makia, Sir Reginald, Timia, and Tay. So don't you dare change that dial. Wake up, everybody. No more sleeping in bed. Our union voices are ringing in every district from Alaska to Maine, Texas to Minnesota, Canada to Puerto Rico, because we don't play at CWA. Our union brothers, sisters, and siblings at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette have been outside for 25 months striking on the picket lines. And yet while they're striking, they're still churning out the news with facts for you and me. Let's show our support to them by making sure we subscribe to unionprogress.com. And once you have subscribed to this free publication, how about going over and donating to their strike fund at cwa.org/ppg-donate? Because when we fight, we win. Now, I want to take the opportunity and the privilege this morning. I know normally I usually come and talk about a human rights activist, but there's something that has been burning me that I wanted to talk about, and that is the intersection of prison labor, human rights, and civil rights. I want to discuss a critical issue, and that is how the exploitation of the incarcerated individuals intersects with human rights and civil rights. Whether it's prisoners in California fighting wildfires for $1 an hour, or those in Alabama working in fast food or other industries for even less, these practices reveal deep injustices rooted in our history. As civil rights leader Reverend William Barber reminds us, there is no way to stand for justice without standing for the poor and the marginalized. And in this nation, incarcerated individuals are among the most marginalized. Let's begin with the foundation of this issue, the 13th Amendment. While it abolished slavery, it left a loophole that allowed slavery and involuntary servitude as punishment for crime. This loophole is the legal basis for forced prison labor today, and has been exploited for over 150 years to create systems that extract labor from incarcerated individuals without fair compensation or protections. It is no coincidence that those most affected are disproportionately Black and Brown. In Alabama, where prisoners are used to work fast food jobs, and in California, where they risk their lives fighting wildfires, we see echoes of the convict leasing system, a practice that replaced slavery and mass incarceration and forced labor during the Jim Crow era. Civil rights activist Angela Davis has said the prison has become a black hole into which the detritus of contemporary capitalism is deposited. This is exactly what we see in these systems. Profit is prioritized over people. This exploitation has deep roots. During the Jim Crow era, convict leasing flourished, replacing slavery with a system where incarcerated individuals, mostly black men, were leased to private industries. One of the most notorious examples was Alabama's coal mines. After the Civil War, Alabama's economy relied heavily on the labor of incarcerated black men, many of whom were arrested on minor or fabricated charges under black codes designated to criminalize everyday activities. These men were leased to work in brutal condition in coal mines owned by companies like U.S. Steel. The conditions were inhumane. Prisoners worked long hours in dangerous environments, often facing beatings, malnourishment, and death. Historian Douglas Blackman referred to the system as slavery by another name. The profits generated from this unpaid labor enriched companies and helped build the infrastructure of modern Alabama. Today, while convict leasing in its historical form no longer exists, its echoes can be seen in the use of prison labor. Alabama's fast food industry, agricultural work, and manufacturing plants all benefit from incarcerated laborers who earn far less than the federal minimum wage. The industries may have changed, but the underlying exploitation still remains. In California, the situation is similar in principle, though the work is different. Incarcerated individuals are trained to fight wildfires, one of the most dangerous jobs in the country. They earn $1 to $5 a day, risking their lives to save homes and communities. Yet when they leave prison, they are often barred from becoming professional firefighters due to their criminal records. This is not rehabilitation. It is exploitation disguised as opportunity. As Reverend Barbara has pointed out, to be silent in the face of injustice is itself injustice. To not speak is to speak. To not act is to act. We cannot remain silent about a system that treats incarcerated individuals as disposable, whether they are fighting fires in California or flipping burgers in Alabama. The exploitation of prison laborers violates international human rights standards. The United Nations International Labor Organization, ILO, calls for fair wages and safe working conditions for all workers, including incarcerated individuals. Yet in the U.S., the 13th Amendment loophole allows states and corporations to sidestep these principles. This system also undermines civil rights, especially given the racial disparities in incarceration. Black Americans make up roughly 12% of the U.S. population, but represent nearly 40% of the prison population. In Alabama, the numbers are even more stark. This overrepresentation ties directly to historical practices like convict leasing and modern day policies that disproportionately target Black communities. Brian Stevenson, founder of the Equal Justice Initiative, has said the great evil of American slavery wasn't involuntary servitude. It was the narrative of racial difference. That narrative persists today, driving the exploitation of incarcerated individuals who are overwhelmingly Black and Brown. The use of prison labor cannot be separated from the legacy of Jim Crow jobs in the South. During Jim Crow, Black workers were often relegated to the most dangerous, low-paying jobs such as coal mining, sharecropping, and domestic work. These roles were designated to keep Black Americans economically subservient and politically disenfranchised. Prison labor serves a similar function by paying incarcerated individuals pennies on the dollar and denying them labor protection. The system ensures that they remain economically marginalized. Upon release, these individuals face additional barriers to employment, housing, and voting, perpetuating cycles of poverty and incarceration. The connection between past and present is clear. the racial disparities in incarceration, the use of prison labor, and the economic exploitation of Black and brown people are all part of a continuum. As Angela Davis has pointed out, the prison is a form of state-sanctioned control that reproduces the social and economic marginalization of certain communities. We must recognize the exploitation of incarcerated labor is not an isolated issue. It is part of a broader system of racial and economic injustice. So where do we go from here? How do we address these issues? Number one, there must be legislative change. We must advocate for fair wages and labor protections for incarcerated workers. Closing the 13th Amendment loophole is essential to ending forced labor in prisons. Rehabilitation over exploitation. Prison labor programs should prioritize education, skill development, and pathways to meaningful employment upon release. Corporate accountability. Companies that profit from prison labor must be held accountable. Consumers can demand transparency and ethical practices from the businesses they support. Then finally, address racial disparities. We must confront the systemic racism that drives mass incarceration and ensures that Black and brown people bear the brunt of this exploitation. In closing, I leave you with the words of civil rights icon John Lewis, who said, "When you see something that is not right, not fair, not just, you have to speak up. You have to say something. You have to do something. It is time for us to speak up against the exploitation of prison labor. It is time to demand justice for the incarcerated. And it is time to confront the legacy of racial and economic oppression that continues to shape our society." You're tuned into KYOK 1140 AM and the all-new 106.5 FM. If you're on the go, you can take us with you on kyokradio.org. Listen and subscribe to us on the CWA Strong app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, YouTube Music, iHeartRadio, Podchaser. Just search for CWA Hour of Power on your favorite podcast player. That's every Thursday morning, 10 a.m. Central, 11 a.m. Eastern, and 8 a.m. Pacific time. Up next, we have Spotlighting Our Own with Mr. Reginald Small.
Good morning, Errol Minor. Good morning, KYOK radio listeners. It's good to be with you all this morning. I would like to take a moment this morning to acknowledge the passing of one of our own union members from Trenton, New Jersey. On January 9th of 2025, Mrs. Carolyn Wade laid down her sword and shield and transitioned from labor to reward. Carolyn was a union president, member of CWA Local 1040. She was a supporter of diversity, and she served as a diversity at large member of CWA's executive board. One of the members of Local 1040 described her as a classy, smart, and hardworking woman full of wisdom and knowledge. Her funeral services are planned for this weekend. On behalf of the CWA Human Rights Department, we extend our sincerest sympathies to the Wade family, the members of Local 1040, and all impacted by her loss. Rest well, Miss Wade. I would also like to take some time out this morning. I attended the Al Sharpton Breakfast, annual breakfast in celebration of Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday on yesterday. And during one of the speeches delivered, or one of the talks delivered by Martin Luther King III, it occurred to me that we would not have a King holiday most likely without the hard work, the dedication of Miss Coretta Scott King. I was reminded some time ago that we, during Black History Month, that we often talk about Dr. King, and that there are so many other people in addition to Dr. King, not a slight on Dr. King, that we could mention local people, people who've done a civil rights work and activism. And in that conversation with this person, I actually reminded them that there was a time and a period for people of a certain age that in a textbook, there was only Dr. King. In the encyclopedia, we only had Dr. King. And so we of a certain age, we know the Dr. King story, or we think we do. But what's not talked about is as much was Miss Coretta Scott King, who without her, again, I don't even believe we would have a King holiday. And there's a generation that's coming that we need to always remind them of the history and the people on whose shoulders that we stand. So this morning, I just wanted to recognize Coretta Scott King, who is an American author, an activist, and a civil rights leader, who was indeed the wife of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. from 1953 until his assassination in 1968. As an advocate for African-American equality, she was a leader for the civil rights movement in the 1960s. King was also a singer who often incorporated music into her civil rights work. She met her husband while attending graduate school in Boston, though they both became increasingly active in the American civil rights movement. She played a prominent role in the years after her husband's assassination in 1968, when she took on the leadership of struggle for racial equality herself and became active in the women's movement. King founded the King Center and sought to make his birthday a national holiday. She finally succeeded when Ronald Reagan signed legislation which established the Martin Luther King Jr. Day on November 2nd, 1983. She later broadened her scope to include both advocacy for LGBTQ rights and opposition to apartheid. King became friends with many politicians before and after Martin's death, including John F. Kennedy, Lyndon B. Johnson, and Robert F. Kennedy. Her telephone conversation with John F. Kennedy during the 1960s presidential election has been credited by historians for mobilizing African-American voters. She was inducted into the Alabama Woman's Hall of Fame, the National Woman's Hall of Fame, and was the first African-American to lie in state at the Georgia State Capitol. King has been referred to as the first lady of the civil rights movement. So today, I want to recognize all of the strong women that have stood beside very strong men in this movement. Some mentioned, some known, and some unknown. I would like to recognize all the pastors' wives who have co-pastored behind the scenes and have made the movement possible. I would like to recognize the women who have had to stand in an humble way in order to get the message across. There are so many that I couldn't dare name them all, but I'm going to name some of the greats as we get ready to go into Black History Month after we celebrate Dr. King's birthday. The Dorothy Heights, the Juanita Craft, the activists named and unnamed, those in union, in the labor movement. There are just so many. But I want you to know that your record is on high. And Errol, I will turn it back over to you.
That was a beautiful segment in acknowledging the people that stand beside and help carry the burden of doing what's right in society. Would you say that, Reginald? Would you agree with me on that?
I would agree with you wholeheartedly, Errol. And it takes a strong person to do things that, and you're not recognized for those mm-hmm. things. And specifically, I'm always inspired by Mrs. King because it wasn't about her. It was about the legacy of her husband and continuing the movement, not just about his legacy, but continuing the movement and taking on the torch. And we often have to, we stand on those shoulders, but we don't stop there. We have to carry the torch forward and actually pave the way for others to carry the torch.
And I know we probably can stay on this forever and a day, but one of the things that I always liked about Mrs. King was that she was humble and she was classy.
She was all of those things. And she carried herself with such a grace and a dignity. And I read somewhere once, or I heard someone say that she wrote letters. You know, that's a thing of the past. How many of us actually get handwritten letters in the mailbox? I still write them, but I very rarely receive them back. But she wrote letters to people and she recognized birthdays and she had a very personal touch.
Right. And one of the things that I noticed that I've been doing, I write letters, but I don't mail them.
Email though.
I email them, yes, because writing is the form in which people can see your thoughts, where you're thinking, where you're trying to go. And I think that is a form that a lot of us have gotten away from because email is so accessible and it's quick. But a lot of times, how many times people don't answer our emails?
Letter is personal, and I like personal.
Yes.
So if you take the time
Yes.
out and write me a letter, that means a lot to me. And I know that hand cramp, so it's personal.
Listen, I have to type mine out. My handwriting is horrible, so I have to type mine and mail it to you,
If you write me a letter, Errol, I'll take it with scribble or whatever. It'll
okay?
it's everything.
All right, I appreciate that. One of the things that I want to go back to and talk about, and we're so fortunate that we can broadcast from all over the country without any problem. And one of the things that we talked about last week was National Slavery and Human Trafficking Prevention Month. And I'm bringing that up again where we can talk about it a little bit because I am in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. So I want to give a shout out to CWA Local 3640. We had an opportunity to teach the gender justice classes on yesterday. And it was awesome. Not only was it awesome, they were attentive. They were ready to jump in to find out more. And when you just take the time out to listen at look at read the evaluations of the class, I'm just thankful to Sir Reginald Small for teaching me how to teach this gender justice class. So thank you, Reginald, for all of your hard work. So I'm waiting on the other one, though. You know, I got that, right. So what I want to bring out today is CWA Local 3640. They are having a Wear Blue Day on Friday. And they have already started their National Slavery and Human Trafficking Prevention Month. And so they got an opportunity to do their community activity. And so they will go forward on Friday with asking all of their fellow coworkers to wear blue on Friday. So I have a little piece that they have shared with us, and they wanted us to know they have entitled theirs In the Know for January 2025. The National Slavery and Human Trafficking Prevention Month is observed every January to raise awareness about the existence of human trafficking and slavery and to promote efforts to combat these crimes. Communication Workers of America, CWA Local 3640, as a labor union representing workers, participates in or support this observance by raising awareness within its membership and advocating for stronger protections against human trafficking, especially in industries where exploitation may occur. Many unions, including CWA, support policies that protect workers from exploitation, uphold workers' rights, and promote safe working conditions. Efforts around human trafficking prevention align with labor advocacy by addressing forced labor, wage theft, and unsafe working conditions, which are common in human trafficking cases. North Carolina is among the most affected states. Most interstate highways, a large in transit military population, numerous rural agriculture areas with a high demand for cheap labor, and an increasing number of gangs all contribute to making our state a hotbed for human trafficking. An overview of how some North Carolina highways connect to trafficking issues. Major interstate highways facilitate the movement of people and goods across states, making them vulnerable routes for traffickers. Highways like I-85 and I-95 connect multiple cities and regions, which can be exploited to transport victims. These highways run through or near major metropolitan areas, including Charlotte, Durham, Fayetteville, Jacksonville, and Raleigh, connect to other cities that may serve as hubs for trafficking activities. North Carolina, we found out, is ranked ninth in the United States for human trafficking. Interstate I-95 is a major trafficking route through North Carolina and serves as an important east-west corridor connecting North Carolina with other significant cities along the East Coast. North Carolina is a key hub for human trafficking. I-95 is a predominantly trafficking route that extends through North Carolina and other East Coast states. Additionally, Interstate I-81 runs parallel to I-95 as another major trafficking route. Several cities in North Carolina are particularly noted for human trafficking activities, including Durham, Fayetteville, and Raleigh. Several factors contribute to human trafficking in North Carolina, such as large military populations, rural agriculture areas with a high demand for the cheap labor. Indicators for human trafficking, rest area and truck stops. These locations are often cited as places where trafficking can occur as they provide anonymity and are frequented by long haul truck drivers and travelers. Increased risk factors. Areas near highways can have a higher prevalence of vulnerable populations, including runaways and homeless individuals who are at risk of being trafficked. Local law enforcement and organizations are increasingly aware of risks associated with these highways. They conduct training for officers and community members to recognize signs of trafficking. Various agencies, including the FBI and local enforcement, law enforcement, work with NGOs to improve reporting mechanisms and victim support services. For resources and support, you can reach out to the National Human Trafficking Hotline at 1-888-883-7888. Let me say that one more time, 888-373-7888. Or just text Be Free. That's 233-733. Text Be Free, 233-733. Organizations in North Carolina, such as the North Carolina Coalition Against Human Trafficking, work to combine trafficking and provide resources for victims. For a website, you may also go to speakupnorthcarolina.org. I-85 and I-95 serve as a critical highways that can facilitate human trafficking activities due to their extensive reach and accessibility. Increased awareness, education, and law enforcement efforts are essential to combat the trafficking that occurs along these routes. If you need more specific information about initiatives or resources related to trafficking along these highways, just feel free to ask. In North Carolina, reach out to Communication Workers of America Local 3640 because they can play a pivotal role in raising awareness about human trafficking during National Slavery and Human Trafficking Prevention Month by educating its members and the community about how trafficking occurs and advocating for prevention. So when in doubt or if you are in trouble, don't forget to text Be Free 233-733 or 888-373-7888. Just wanted to bring that to your attention, and we want to give a great big shout out to everyone at local CWA Local 3640 in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. You're listening to CWA Our Power on KYOK 1140 AM and the all-new 106.5 FM. If you're on the go, you can take us with you on kyokradio.org. Listen and subscribe to us live every Thursday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time. You may listen to us on the CWA Strong app or your favorite podcast player, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, YouTube Music, iHeartRadio, and Podchaser. Just search for CWA Hour of Power on your favorite podcast player. Wake up, everybody. No more sleeping in bed. Turn the volume up just a little bit louder. This morning, we have the Tea with Tay. And this morning, we will be talking about stigmatized and confrontational phrases rooted in racism, causing them to be problematic and divisive. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning. Good morning, KYOK listeners, and good morning to my union family. So today we will be talking about exactly what Errol just said to us here. But first, we are going to get into last week's topic of DEI. I see some of these companies are trying to backtrack. We're pulling them back in, holding them accountable. So there was an article that we read, Errol shared with me. So There was a topic about McDonald's, and now they want to explain why they've made the changes to DEI. And we want to talk about that today because I truly feel like they're gaslighting the people. Again, there's no time to backtrack. If you said it, you got to mean it. So one of the things that they are talking about is the changes to diversity, equity, and inclusion is so that everyone feels included. And they're saying how over time they've actually implemented DEI initiatives and they were successful. But now that they're successful, they've been successful, they've chosen this year to basically take them away. We're going to take everything away because now we can show you hard numbers that we're diverse. And I think that if you have hard numbers showing your diversity, you still didn't understand the assignment. So, what I want to say is for McDonald's here at this time, there's no time again to backtrack on what you originally wanted to do. But if you are going to tell people that, diversity, equity, and inclusion was not needed, in the same sentence, tell them how it was a positive thing for your company. It made people feel wanted and included. Then I think we have to talk about those things first. And again, what highlighted the most to me was the fact that you have hard numbers on how diverse your group is now.
And
And
Tay,
you don't
what?
mind.
Go
Go
ahead.
ahead, Harold. Go ahead.
I guess all of us are just right there on it, trying to get in there because we know Tay can get in and just go for it. Tay, when I was reading that article about my McDonald's, to me, why would you have to do a course correction in this area if it's been successful? Because that's what it comes off to me about.
I feel like McDonald's and other companies as such, they're not really about the people. They're about the whatever policy that is currently fitting or appeasing the crowd. When, like I said, if you really didn't need diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives, you wouldn't have started them in the first place. If your company was already so diverse and they were already looking to make that change, why did you implement those programs in the first place? You have
Because
to
it
ask
was
yourself.
convenient.
Well, I'm stuck on the part where they said that it's making people feel excluded. And the whole term is equity and inclusion. The whole entire thing is about making the masses and the whole group and the overall feel included. Like, that's the whole thing. Like, when you look at this world that we live in, the majority of the world does not look one way, right? The world in which we live is a diverse world. It's a diverse community. It's a place of color and different genders and identities and all these different things. So what really gets me about the whole thing is the fact that we're supposed to believe that a program or whatever we want to call it is meant to foster inclusivity and equity is somehow exclusionary. It doesn't make sense to me.
Well, I think when we deal with this in a truthful and transparent manner, we have to acknowledge that with anything that looks like equality or others getting what is right, there's a group of people who feel that you're taking something from them in order to give it to someone else. And that's just not how the pie is cut up. We're not taking your slice by including a guaranteeing inclusion for a group of people. It's but there is a conversation being held going on in America that there's this group of people who feels that we're taking something that's rightfully theirs in order to give it to someone else.
And
Don't
Reginald,
you
I'm
see?
glad you said that because
That's where
I'm
that exclusion piece comes from, in my opinion.
I've struggled a lot with this as a not necessarily young, but younger woman, Black woman in society, right? Where people feel entitled to certain things. And it's I just
I have a hard time understanding how a job or something belongs to someone, right? How does a job or a position belong to you?
Well, if these behaviors have been embedded in our society and in our institutions for generations, and you feel that it is just the way it should be, well, you might feel that way. You might think that that belongs to you, that it's rightfully yours. It's a thought process that's hard to get rid of. And I don't think we ever got rid of some of that thought process. It was just maybe I look at it as if it was a dragon locked in a cage, and then it was unlocked, and it's hard to put it back.
Reginald,
Exactly.
you were putting this so eloquently.
You might be, are you being facetious, Errol?
Yes. Go ahead, Tay. I'm sorry. No, I'm just saying, Reginald, you're saying it. Yeah, you're saying it how it needs to be said. But how I feel about it is that sometimes we miss the message. Diversity means everyone. So you continue to exclude a certain group, then you want it to be excluded. Our message is everyone wants to feel the same valued in their workplace. Everyone wants to feel accepted. I didn't say you should accept this group because they're a minority, or you should accept it. I said everyone wants to be accepted. And again, so many of these companies are missing the message. And I, it the only way to show them is where, let's be transparent, is all they care about is the revenue. And all we care about is having a workplace that looks like everyone. If I go into my community, I want to go into my community and see it. Different group of people. I don't want to see one group of people or one group all by themselves, because now the companies don't have to respect the diversity portion, the equity and inclusion portion. So if you didn't need these trainings, if it was not important to have these talks, then why did you start them again?
Well, I can
Well,
tell you why.
go.
And I'm sorry, Errol, but here's the thing. And this is what I think that we like to ignore as society, and something that we're going to talk about a little bit later, is the fact that what people decided to do was take affirmative action and relabel it as DEI, right? They did not take diversity, equity, inclusion for what it's supposed to be and what it stood for. And instead, what they did is they use it as a modern day form of affirmative action, which means in their minds that you need to have a certain amount of people to check off these boxes for all of these different protected categories. So you had to have a certain amount of people of color. You had a certain amount of people, a certain amount of women. You had a certain amount of members of the LGBTQIA plus community. You had to have a certain amount of workers with disabilities, or differently abled bodies. You had to have all of these things now in this modern day version of affirmative action, and that's why they missed the mark, right? Instead of you trying to literally like really cultivate a society and a community within your workplaces that look and feel like the society in which they are, right? These companies decided to check off boxes because it made them look good after, everything what happened with the George Floyd murder and things like that. And it's like that again, they missed the mark because they were never integral about it in the beginning. They were never trying to make the change in the beginning. They were trying to fill a quota based on what society had determined was right at that time. And then now that the tides have kind of changed in the world that we lived in, and affirmative action has been rolled back, they're now rolling back these DEI initiatives. And if DEI and affirmative action were the same thing, then they would have been called as such and had the same definition to them, but they did not. However, society has chosen to make DEI and affirmative action basically, are virtually the same thing. And that's why we are where we are now. Because again, like we mentioned last week, these DEI initiatives did not start to be repealed or rolled back until after the Supreme Court rolled back affirmative action.
I
Well,
can
so
do a better job, and I don't I agree wholeheartedly with you, Makia, but I think that we need to do a better job with what DEI is, and actually say it, diversity, equity, and inclusion, because the term DEI is just becoming this slang word that has this negative vibe to it, and we need to do a better job with that. Supposedly, our nation is built upon the principles of diversity, equity, and inclusion. The Declaration of
What
Independence.
did you say? Hold on, Richard. What did you say? Repeat what you just said,
I said, supposedly,
please.
our nation is
Yes,
built
heavily on the supposedly.
Please be heavily
diversity,
on the
equity, and
supposedly.
inclusion. How many of us have heard we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal? There's your diversity. And then we go into, if you look at the 14th Amendment, they talk about the Equal Protection Clause. There's your equity. And then we all, the most controversial thing is the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God with liberty and justice for all. There's your inclusion piece. We're built upon it. So now you can't get rid of it. It's there. It's in the foundation of what we're supposedly built upon.
And we all know
Rich.
that that foundation that we're supposedly built upon was a foundation where some of us were not even whole people at that time. And that's a whole nother issue, because and you guys correct me if I'm wrong, but when that declaration was declared, hint, hint, some of us were only one third or one half or one fourth of a person, technically.
And again, I can't argue that, but somebody wrote it, we adopted it, and we're supposed to live on it. And so that's my argument. It's there. It's written into the fibers of this nation. And so therefore it will never be done away with, and we can't let it be done away with. And if companies are following what's popular, we need to, and Errol mentioned this to me in a private conversation, if companies are going with what's popular, we need to show the companies what's popular, what we want as the consumer.
That's
Right.
exactly it. Go ahead, Errol.
Okay. And one of the things that everybody will start harping on eventually, I'm hearing it already, and that's meritocracy, meritocracy, meritocracy. If people were hired because of merit and systemic racisms were not present, of course, you could hire someone on merit. But because we have people that are in positions that don't want to hire certain people, this is why the Civil Rights Act was written. This is why affirmative action was written. And this is why DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, has emerged, because it is a modern response to the persistent inequities of various policies and hiring practices done by various corporations. You're supposed to, your whatever organization you're in, whatever company that you're working for, it is supposed to reflect the community, not just one side of the community. Am I right about it?
We're right about it.
Oh,
Exactly
I
right
know I'm
about
right.
it. You
You
know
know
what?
what, Errol? I'm glad that you brought up meritocracy, because what people love to do is, right, is they like to only pick out the definitions or the parts of the word, right, that makes sense to them or that look good. And when you look up the definition of meritocracy as a noun, one of the definitions says a ruling or influential class of educated or skilled people. Now, the influential part is where I'm gonna hone in on, right? Because how do you gain influence? People don't just have the power and influence over other people without other things. I didn't just wake up tomorrow. I can't just wake up tomorrow. I'm like, all of a sudden, I have all of this influence. You have to have some form of privilege and some form of power and some form of capacity in a way over other people in order to be influential. And the masses are not influential separate. You know, as a collective, right? The masses can move mountains, and we can enforce and embrace change. But we all know that the people with the influence are not the masses.
Good point right there.
Errol mentioned something else about the hiring, and it goes back to one of our trainings that we talk about, the affinity bias, that people hire like people, meaning people like them. So the people in power hire people who that look like them, come from communities like them, and kind of think like them. That's an affinity bias, and it's almost a natural thing to do, but the marginalized folks are affected by that. You
Well,
don't want to hire what you're not comfortable with.
it's the ones that don't want to be in these classes and educate themselves are the ones that's pushing. Let me hush before my kid mutes me.
You know what? It's time that we have real conversations, and I feel like that's why we are here, and so that we can have those real conversations. I don't know how many times this week I've said that uncomfortable conversations are the ones that bring change. Those are the conversations we gotta lean into. And if you don't understand, I'm gonna help you understand. Something that earlier when we were talking, Mykia, we talk about how people change the definition of words to fit that whatever they're looking to the message they're looking to put out. I'm sorry, I can't even say it right, Mykia, but that's something that's happening with the word the diversity, equity, and inclusion. So it was a positive message behind it at first, and then we had all these companies and all their skill builders in a way to figure out how to make this a negative thing. That's exactly what happened.
Exactly. The people with influence decided that they were going to influence society and make it something different. And that's exactly where I wanted to go with this segment today, is that we as people have to stop allowing society and the status quo to change what's right. Right. And so when I was talking to Tay about this earlier, I was talking about the word incredible. So when you think about the root of the word and the word itself, it means something that is not credible. It's right there in the word. But we today decide that incredible is this fantastic, wonderful, fabulous thing, but that's not what it meant. That's what society decided to choose for it to mean. Just like the word gang. Gang used to mean or refer to a group of workers. So a group of just working individuals was considered a gang. But now when you hear gang, you automatically think like a negative group of people who, have bases in violence and all of these things. And it's like, that's not what it meant, but that's what society decided that it would mean in the future. And then that's how we live today. And so again, when I talk about people with influence and I talk about how, there are these societal changes that people now make the status quo, we have to fight against that. And we have to always make sure that we keep what is right, right. And words are important, and words hold a lot of power, especially within these days of social media. I'm telling you, you make something a hashtag or you turn something into a phrase and it will take off, i.e., DEI and other things like that. So it's like, we have to make sure that we hold these things true to what their original definition is and not allow society or societal pressures to determine how these things are going to make us feel.
And one of the other words that we had talked about is activist. And I was going to say this before we went into this portion. I don't know about you guys, but Tay did a marvelous job last week telling her story at the AFL-CIO MLK conference. And while she was there up on stage, she put you right in her lap and was like she was telling you everything that she has gone through in being an advocate or an activist for herself. So, Tay, our hat is off to you for the job well done that you did on last week, telling your activist and your activist story, as well as fighting for yourself.
Thank you, Errol. And it was a great opportunity. And I was so excited to be there. And I want to highlight the word activist because this group of people that I love so dearly, when we first talked about the word activist, I was at the table and I was saying words, well, I just do trainings. And my kid, she had to, activist is not, it's not a bad thing to be an activist. We let society make us think that that means that I'm out here doing things a whole nother way. I don't know what kind of activists you see on TV, but the ones that I see on TV, they're doing a lot more than what I'm doing. So I didn't see myself as an activist. But when you actually look into the word, I am an activist. I'm advocating for myself. I'm advocating for others. I'm speaking a truth that sometimes, again, we are ashamed to tell. And I was so excited to be able to get on the stage as a human rights activist and tell my story. So thank you, Errol, for highlighting that. But it was a great opportunity.
And the thing about it is, you're a leader, you're a community leader, you're an advocate, you're a change agent, and that's what an activist is. We are here. Listen, this is what I want all human rights activists to get in their headset, they in their mind, I should say. You are not a thermometer. You are a thermostat. And that means you change the climate, the atmosphere in wh where you walk in. And it's going to take us turning up some heat, saying some stuff that people don't want to hear, and it's going to make them feel uncomfortable instead of us being activists feeling uncomfortable. I digress.
And I'm glad you said that because that's exactly what it is, right? We think about a human rights activist. An activist is a person who campaigns to bring about political or social change, right? So as human rights activists, we're just here to make change in a positive way for the humans that occupy this earth. That is our duty, I feel like, as human beings and as a civilized community. We are here to just make things better, not only for us, but for the people that come behind us. And I
Yes.
have a huge issue with people taking issue against that. Okay. There should not be, if I feel like, you know what, I'm, and then another word too is ally. And you would think that an ally would be a great term. But for some
Oh,
reason, there's a
wow.
negative connotation with that too. And it's like, as me being someone who stands up for someone that doesn't look like me or someone that I may not have as many things in common with, but I know that their struggle can potentially or somehow be my struggle and that I can help them in a way to increase capacity and build them up, then I'm going to do so. And I don't think that there is an issue, right, with me helping out my fellow man, woman, or whatever, sibling, whatever. And that I just take huge issue with that. Like being an activist and being an ally is a bad thing. How do we think we got here as a society, right? How do we get here? How do we get here and move the needle and get to this place where we are and live in this capacity without moving everything forward? And when have we ever moved anything forward alone?
I guess I've been living under a rock, you all, because I didn't know that activist was had a negative tone to it. But I guess when I think about it, it does have the stereotype of what we think that it actually is. So, but it's one of the proudest things that a wake up moment for me when I realized that I was an activist. I was very happy about it. It's one of the things I start off with now, when I address it. It's work that has to be done. There are activists that go back. We wouldn't even be out of bondage if it hasn't if it wasn't for activism, active
I would say activision. Now, wait a minute.
activism.
I'm sorry. I'm talking. I got tangled up there. But it's very important work. Very, very important work. And that's what we actually, as union people, that we need to be creating more activists. Not just members, but truly activists.
And I know we've got to wrap this up. We're almost out of time now. But one of the things that I enjoyed seeing were people being inspired in our gender justice classes. And when you get the question or the aha moment or a light bulb goes off in one of the training classes, when someone says, you know, I just realized, or how much of a negative aspect have I been to someone's life? You know, that means a whole lot. And to be able to see that while you're in training, that just makes you feel good. And I don't know about you all, but it just gives me the ability to it inspires me, I should say, to continue to continue to be a human rights activist.
You know, Errol, what I'll say to that is John Schlois, the president of the News Guild here at CWA, always says to me, you know, it's our job to minimize harm. And I carry that everywhere I go. Because a lot of people always say, you know, you want to leave someplace better, you know, better than you found it and all of that stuff. But I want to minimize harm. Not only do I want to leave it better than I left it, but I want people to not be as harmed by my footsteps that I paid, that I left there, right? Because sometimes you can feel like you left something better, you know, left something better, but there was still, you know, turmoil or something in that revolution, which is also one of those words that people have to be carry about, be careful about. But I really do think that we need to walk this earth and think about how we can minimize harm. And I stand by that. And that's one of the fa that that's one of the my bit favorite quotes is one of the best things anyone has ever said to me is just, we need to minimize harm.
Yeah, maybe next week we can talk about that speech that was stated on last night, but we'll come back to that. The Civil Rights Act of 1964, affirmative action and DEI programs are not just policies. They are lifelines for fairness and equality. They represent our collective acknowledgement of past injustices and our commitment to be a better future. Yet the existence of these measures remind us that the work is far from over. Let us move forward with a renewed sense of purpose, leveraging the lessons of history to create a more just and inclusive society. Let us reject division and embrace solidarity, ensuring that equality is not just an ideal, but a lived reality for all. Together, we can build a world where no one needs policies to affirm their worth, because fairness and humanity are inherent in every interaction. As we come down to the final minutes of the show, an hour is not long enough to be with you, and a week is too long to be away from you. You have been tuned into the CW Human Rights Justice Hour Power broadcast. I hope something you heard today has inspired you to take action toward creating positive change in the world. Every person has the power to make a difference, no matter how small. And by working together, we can create a world where human rights are respected and valued. So I encourage each of you in the listening audience to reflect on your role in promoting human rights to effect change in your communities and beyond. Know that you are not alone in your quest for a more just and equitable world. When faced with injustice, it can be easy to lose hope and give up. But remember, justice may be slow, like the truth, but when it finally comes, it will stand. Until next Thursday, 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, right here on KYOK 1140 a.m. and the all-new 106.5 FM, KYOKradio.org. T with Tay, thank you so much for tuning in today. May God bless you and keep you is our prayer. See you next week.